Welcome to the Concealed Carry Podcast, Season 10, Episode 2. And this is the Concealed Carry Podcast, part of the ConcealedCarry.com network, brought to you by HK. Today is Thursday, May 2nd, 2024, as of the recording of this episode, and I am your host, Riley Bowman. Today, I'm super excited to have a special guest with me on the program. His name is Paul Sharp. Paul, glad to have you on.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me here.
Looking forward to this. We're going to talk about some combatives and fitness and self-defense. And I'm sure all kinds of things today because you just get it. You know, you've lived it and you're well-rounded in your approach, I think, to these topics. So I think people really benefit to, you know, hear from you. So looking forward to it. But first, before we get into it, today's episode is sponsored, brought to you by Palm Pepper Spray. Glad to have them on board as a sponsor. They're not only a sponsor of this episode of the Concealed Carry Podcast, but they are also a sponsor of this year's Guardian Conference in September in Oklahoma City, which I believe you're going to still be a part of, Paul.
Yeah.
I'm down, man. We're definitely hoping to see you there and counting on having you back. Paul taught at the conference last year. It was well received. I observed one of your classes and thought it was, incredibly. I thought it was really well done, especially for folks that had never done anything like that before, had never done jiu-jitsu or anything. Yeah. You had a really straightforward, simple, no BS approach to, like, okay, here's some basic things that you folks can learn here in 4 hours and then hopefully go out, you know, and apply. And then also, you know, maybe go and get some more training while you're at it too at some point.
Yeah, right. For sure.
So it was really fantastic. But thanks to Palm Pepper Spray for being a sponsor of the podcast today and for sponsoring the Guardian Conference. Folks, I've got some right here in my pocket. So it's not just, you know, they're not just a sponsor and I just talk about it. I know you're, yep, see Paul's
point. There it is.
Yep. There you go. So it's great to have a tool like this on hand. I mean, I actually pulled this out of my pocket not that long ago, not because anything happened, but because maybe something it might happen, and just having it in the hand and ready to go, sometimes it's a good plan. So thanks to their sponsorship and support of everything we're doing over here. And then also honorary sponsor is, well, you, Paul, because you're here and you've got your coaching business, paulsharpcoaching.com. I know you mentioned that you just basically have a landing page right now that you're building up the website. But folks, you should definitely consider contacting Paul for your training needs. And then also, if you're in the Boise, Idaho area, you should definitely check out Paul's gym. Straight Blast Gym, right?
Jeez. Yep, that's it.
I don't know why that's like struggling to like come off my tongue. Straight Blast Gym, sbgidaho.com. I just know from knowing people that know you, Paul, that speak really highly of you and what you do and your skill set and the way you do things. And again, I've witnessed that personally. So I know that's always a common question. People are like, well, I'd like to get involved in combatives, in, you know, BJJ and Muay Thai or whatever it is. And like, sometimes you just got to know people to know, like, where are the good gyms? I mean, I just asked you some questions about the Denver area before we went live. So sbgidaho.com if you want to learn more about Paul's training gym there in the Boise, Idaho area. And I know there, I see you quite often, you know, out and about and at different events and training events and teaching. And so I know you get around as well. So
yeah, for sure.
Yeah. It's fantastic. Well, there you go. Thank you for being here and being a part of this. Let's dive into it. And I think the first thing is for those that don't know, which I suspect there are, you know, a few people at least listening to this podcast.
Who is
Paul Sharp? Like, I mean, tell us a little bit about your background, and that could be anything. I mean, you could go as deep or as little deep as you care to. But obviously something brought you to this point of where you are today and knowing all the things you know and the experiences that you share. So where do you want to begin?
Yeah, for sure. So I think, you know, I was born and raised in Maryland, so the Eastern Shore of Maryland. So little tiny area of the country. I think our county maybe had 13,000 people. It was tiny,
yeah,
you know, small area. And early on, you know, you got to remember this is like the '70s. So, early on it was determined that I had ADD or ADHD, whatever you want to call it, and hyperactive disorder. And I was just a handful. And then they realized that I couldn't read. And the reason I couldn't read is because I had dyslexia. And I drop off the first letter. So the first letter of every word, not all the time, but will fall off, you know. And so I was struggling to read, couldn't keep up. So they put me in a special ed class, which in a tiny county is a pretty hellacious place to be, because everybody from all over the county, from all the different schools, gets sent to the same place. So they're all bused to the same room. And yeah, so I'm like this first grader, you know, in a class full of big kids. There's kids my size. Well, actually, one of my best friends to this day still is a kid from there, you know. And ironically enough, he's literally a nuclear scientist. Like, how he ended up in that class is like a testament to what Einstein said. If you tell a fish to climb a tree, you're always going to think the fish is stupid, you know.
Right.
So, you know, but thank God for, you know, intervention, for people who pay attention. The teacher of the class was not the best teacher. She would come in, put her coffee, her Stanley mug on the desk, pour herself a cup of coffee, open a newspaper, light a cigarette, because you could do that back then, you know, windows open, and just never say another word the whole day. We were left to our own devices. Mm. So the bigger kids would come over and just pilfer our lunches and take our stuff and all that. And so you learn pretty quickly the value of being able to protect yourself and hold your own, whether it's bluffing them really hard because tiny and you just have to make them think you're crazy, or actually right. being able to fight, you know. But thank God, man, there was what I now know as a student teacher. So she was there and she says, listen, I've read through what's going on with you. I kind of know what's happening. You can read. You just have to understand how reading works. And the thing was that she goes, the two things with the ADD, you have the ability to hyperfocus. You have the ability to just fixate, which up till now has been a bad thing. Because once you get mad, or you decide, you know what I mean, you can't not be mad. You just get hyper-focused on that person, and that's what's landed you here, even in first grade. You just can't stop yourself from foolishness. But what if we turn that to learning how to read? And words, sentences are patterns. Paragraphs are patterns. And if we get you to understand how the pattern works and how this word would make sense here in the context of this sentence, even if the first letter isn't there, you can figure out the difference between right, bright, and light. You know, like which would work best in this sentence? Oh, that makes sense. It's light. You know, so then the way to do that is we're going to read every day, all day. So she took me to the library, and every day I would get a book. And I would read that book. And then at the end of the day, she would ask me questions about it to make sure I didn't lie and fake it, you know. And then the next day we'd go back again and get another book. And by the end of the second year, I was reading at a fifth grade level, and they let me go to regular classes. So thank God for her. But I do think that experience at a young age is what put me on the path to valuing the ability to defend myself, valuing the ability to fight, and also just really not liking bullies, you know, just right. really not liking those people, man. You pray on the weak, you're on the list, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah. And so I started wrestling at a young age too. Great opportunity to start wrestling as part of basically like an after school program and to keep kids out of trouble. And so started wrestling at an early age, started boxing at an early age. Boxing was always in my family. And so I have really cool pictures of two of my great uncles. One was in the European theater, one was in the Pacific theater. and their first Christmas back home after World War II, they're in the front yard boxing, you know, and just, you know, gloved up and just having fun. They're laughing. The whole family's around in the picture. You can see my grandmother, who has the picture. You see her in the background laughing, you know, and it's just, that was always fun. That was always just part of it. And so I grew up around that kind of stuff. And so eventually I got into strength training at probably around 15 years old. I started strength training and understanding the benefit of that. And that led me to just kind of step by step to where I am today. It just, that kind of, I was working as a carpenter and the bottom fell out of the market.
Yep.
And, you know, in the late 90s, mid 90s, bottom fell out. All of a sudden there was no work. A friend said, "Hey, they're hiring firefighters and police officers. You want a job?" And I was like, "Yeah, I'll take either one. Just, you know, send me the application. I'll fill it out." And kind of a joke, I got hired on the wrong side, right? So I got hired on the police side. I got hired on the police side of the house. And that started my journey there, where kind of everything came together. The ability to defend myself, all that stuff, just all came together and put me in a position where I was able to take that job as a police officer and I think do a pretty good job while it was there. And yeah, I know kind of all over the place, but I'm just kind of thinking back through it like, man.
And you were a cop down in like Florida thereabouts, right?
No, in Florida I was. So that's where
I remember there was a tie to Florida somewhere.
Yeah, I lived in Miami or in South Florida rather for right before Hurricane Andrew up until 97. And then that's when I got hired up in Illinois.
Gotcha. That's what it was. That's where you were doing the construction work, was in Florida.
Yeah, I was doing construction down there and loving it. I loved it. Building stuff is just such a cool thing.
You know?
It's like you show up and there's an empty lot and then you leave in 3 or 4 days, there's a house.
Yeah.
Like, holy cow.
Yeah.
We did that, man. That's cool. So I've made respect for the trades and just love it. And while I was there, a guy who is a Broward County Sheriff's deputy in the jail got hurt. He went to the same church that I went to and he got hurt. And I said, "Hey man, I've been doing this Brazilian jiu-jitsu stuff and I think it might help you guys." And we talked a little bit back and forth and he said, "All right, well, I'll check it out." So he didn't want to go to the gym that I trained at because it was in Miami. So it was like with traffic, it's probably an hour and a half drive one way. And I was going 4 or 5 days a week. And so he didn't want to make that drive. So I said, "Well, you know, we can just get together in my backyard and roll around. I'll show you some stuff." And we got together. I showed him some stuff, very basic. You have to remember, I'd only been training probably 2 years at that point in jiu-jitsu. I've been training in Jeet Kune Do. I was certified as an instructor in that, certified as an instructor in Filipino martial arts and all that. But then I started the journey of Brazilian jiu-jitsu. And that's what got me kind of into the law enforcement training side of it, was working with him saying, "Hey, I'm going to bring some more guys over next time. Is it okay if we bring our gear, you know, and we're going to try to train and figure this all out?" And then at the same time, one of the guys I was training with at the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu place, he was a police officer in Hialeah. And so I was getting together with him doing kind of the same stuff and working our way through trying to figure out how do I keep a gun on me, keep all my stuff on me, introduce it to the problem if that's necessary. So me as an outsider, I mean, I had a pistol and I had a shotgun because hurricanes, you know,
right.
But I never really carried them around on me. I mean, every now and then I would have the pistol on me. It was an old Beretta 92. And I would have this pistol. I still have it. It's kind of cool. But I would carry that pistol with me on days where I'd have to do payroll. Because sometimes, you know, with three crews, 35 guys, payrolls, it's a lot of money, you know. And so some days I would carry it. But looking back now on it, knowing what I know now about skill and training and everything, just thank God nothing ever happened. I never had to, you know. never had to pull that out and endanger the entire world, except for probably the guy I need to endanger. So, but, you know, just no training whatsoever, just concealed carry class, which was 2 hours, I think. But, so working with those guys, talking about police stuff, troubleshooting that, and then almost at the same time, getting the opportunity to go work as a police officer, it just all came together. And I was also part of the Straight Blast Gym. I was talking with those guys, trying to figure out, like, what does the most functional training look like? How do we train ourselves in the most functional manner? And that just kind of led me to where I am today. It just kept evolving. I kept meeting more people who were either on the same path or wanting to get on the same path, and just growing, and then meeting competitive shooters. You know, the first time I met a competitive shooter was Bruce Gray on a burglary call. It was on a burglary call. So I can't remember if it was his mother or mother-in-law. I think it was his mother-in-law. Lived in the town I worked in. She recently, because of age, they had moved her with them, and they were selling the house. So I think he lived in California at the time.
Yeah, that sounds right.
So he was there to pack stuff up. He's also getting ready for like the world shoot off or something.
Mm-hmm.
So we get a call from the neighbors saying, hey, some guy's in this house over here. It's an older lady. She's not there. I think somebody's breaking into her house, stealing her stuff. So we go over there. It's midnight. And my partner goes to the front door. I swing around to the back door. And I'm looking through the window, and I see him dry firing with what I now understand to be an open gun. At the time, I didn't know what I was looking at. You know, in 1998, I'm looking at, you know, some sort of Seymour Dodd on a 2011, you know, and I'm thinking,
like Han Solo's pistol or something.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, I'm looking at something from Star Wars or Star Trek. What in the world am I looking at? But I knew for sure it was a gun. And so I thought, okay. So I backed away from the window, called my partner up front to let him know, like, hey, there's somebody in there and they've got a gun, but I'm not 100% sure it's a real gun, you know? And so he's like, all right, well, I'm going to knock on the front door. And when I stepped back to look through the window, he was gone. The guy inside was gone. I'm like, oh, I lost such a rookie mistake. I lost sight of the guy. And, you know, so I go to the back door because my partner's like, hey, I'm about to knock on the front door. As I go to the back door, I'm standing at the back door. Bruce Gray opens the back door to throw some stuff in the garbage can or whatever. He opens it. So we scare the crap out of each other. And then that led to a conversation. So we got it all sorted out. And he goes, hey, I'm a competitive shooter. Do you have a range that I can use to just get some time in tomorrow before I drive to Colorado for this competition? And I said, sure, man. He goes, if you want, I'll even work with you with the gun that you have. I'm very familiar with that, you know, and I'll help you guys out. I'm like, man, that'd be awesome. So I call the range master, say, hey, can I have some range time tomorrow? Cause I'm still on probation, so I have to ask permission to be on the range. And he says, yeah, no problem. You know, just make sure you have another officer with you. You can't be down there by yourself on probation. So we get Bruce comes downstairs to the range, and he's like, hey, you know, I'll set up some drills. We're going to run some drills. And yeah, my mind was blown.
Mm-hmm.
I'd never seen anybody shoot that fast, that accurate. It just blew my mind.
Right.
There was a guy, I can't remember his name. There was a guy at the police academy who was a revolver shooter who always competed against Jerry Michalik back in the day. They were always neck and neck with each other. I can't remember his name right now. But anyway, he was an Illinois state trooper. He taught at the academy. I'd seen him shoot a revolver once. So one time I saw a guy at that level shoot, but it was so it was basically a build drill. He was just testing a revolver during a break in our class. And I asked him, I'm like, what the heck was that? You know, and he's like, oh, you know, I think he said he was testing the timing or something on the revolver. So I was like, oh, okay. Don't know what that means, but I'm impressed. And then, so the next time I saw somebody shoot that level was Bruce Gray. And that was probably a month into being on my own. So I was just brand new on my own. So early on in my career. Mm. And he came down on the range. He shot. He did a ran some drills. And I said, man, you know, at the time I had a Smith & Wesson 45-86. That was my issue. Double action only. That was my issue pistol. Just a piece of garbage. And I remember complaining to him, I'd love to be able to shoot like that. The first thing he did was he got me to stop shooting Weaver. So I was shooting very much, you know, traditional Weaver. He's like, hey, I'm not saying you can't shoot well like that, but what I am saying is you probably would shoot better if you were bring your arms up and are more symmetrical and, you know, change a few things. So he had already changed a few things. And I was like, all right, cool. I'm watching this guy. He's burning it down. I'm definitely not. This other guy who's a range officer is not burning it down. So whatever us two are doing, I don't want to know anything else about it. I want to know what he's doing. Mm-hmm. So it took me a second to realize, because of my background with the functional martial arts, you know, where it's like, doesn't work, get rid of it, because you're going to get punched in the face. So
isn't that like
same with shooting?
Like kind of like a Bruce Lee quote, like what is it? It's like
absorb what's useful. Yes, and discard.
There you go. You nailed it.
Yes.
Sorry.
Yeah, exactly.
Not trying to interrupt, but that just popped into my head.
No, man, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's exactly it. That's a great point. We had a saying back then in the straight place gym of like only performance counts. I don't care about anything else. Mm-hmm. I just want performance. What is going to make me perform better? So I was kind of crybabying about this pistol and how difficult it is to use and shoot and all that. And Bruce said, hey, let me see that. And he takes it. And he has a timer, which I'd never seen a timer before. And he has this timer and he's down kind of at the, like the ready. And he comes up on the timer and puts two rounds of this 40 from this 45, just like, bam, right into the head box at 7 yards. And he holds the timer up for me to look at. And it's under a second. It's like 0.89 or something crazy. Mm-hmm. And I just remember sitting there going, huh? Okay. So all my excuses just got destroyed. You know, like this guy just took my pistol, which had a 16-pound trigger pull, double action only, and smoked it. I'm just going to train. I need to shut up and train. Stop making excuses. So that was my intro to the competitive shooting side of the house, where I realized those guys have value too. Mm. Not that I didn't see it before, but I wasn't aware of it. I didn't know it existed. You know, like – my grandfather was an avid skeet shooter and trap shooter. My dad was like a state champion, you know, trap shooter. So I grew up understanding and appreciating the competitive side of that, you know, kind of like the bird gun thing, which if you can shoot, you know, really well at trap and skeet, you're probably going to do okay in a hunt, you know. So I could kind of see where that transfer could happen. But when it came to the pistol, at the police academy, that transfer never clicked for me, you know, because the guys at the academy were very much like, isosceles is stupid. Shoot the Weaver. You should only shoot from the Weaver. Mm. If it doesn't start with a four, you're an idiot. You shouldn't have it in a gunfight. And so that kind of thing, you know, very, very much. And I understand too why that has to be that way. Cause later on when I had a chance to teach in the academy, I quickly understood that when somebody doesn't even know which end of the pistol goes up or down, you probably should have them all lay their belts on the table and tell them how to put it together, you know, and then later on they can change it. But for right now, let's just all get a starting point. So I get it. I totally, you know, understand why they did what they did. But so once that happened, then I was all in. I was like, all right, I dove into modern isosceles, got hardcore into it. Went to train with Ron Avery as soon as I could. Got two classes in with him. Just amazing. Blew my mind. Went from there. I went to DR Middlebrooks. Trained with him as much as I could. Especially
that's a name I haven't heard in a while.
Yeah, especially the stuff he was doing from with a stock pistol. That the pistol that he competed with at Worlds was garbage. That it, no, I mean, You're not sponsored by EAA, are you, or anything
no,
like that?
No, I'm not.
Okay, cool. Tankfolio, nothing like that. All right. That gun was garbage, man. So, you know, it was just, it was a 9mm, kind of light. The slide was really light, if I remember right, the frame. And just, it felt like the trigger just had sand, like somebody just dumped sand down in there. It was just garbage. And he's running this thing and winning, you know. And so, man, I got to see what this guy's doing. So I went and trained with him, and that was super beneficial. You know, I ended up becoming an instructor in his system. I think it was like the second or third guy to become an instructor with his system. So, yeah, man, that's kind of what all led me to here. Just, I kept getting more influenced by the competitive functional side. And just seeing the parallels where to kind of like racing, you know, rack and pinion steering, you know, anti-brake assist, all that stuff. It all comes from the racing side of the house. Paddle shifts. Like you can get a minivan with a paddle shift, you know, and, you know, because it's been so tested in the racing side of the house that now it applies to the street side. Yeah. And that was, yeah, that's pretty much how I ended up where I am. I just always was so influenced by the sports side and wanting to test myself in the sports side and then see how I can make that work in the street side.
Yeah.
So kind of where, how I ended up here, man.
Yeah.
Even in SWAT and all that stuff, I was always like, hey man, we should check out these guys. You know, like Barnhart Performance guys are up here at North Chicago. Like we should go check them out, you know? And it's like, so I was always kind of like pushing people towards the sport, you know?
That's cool. And I got a comment first that I really appreciate you sharing everything you just did. And especially the story about meeting Bruce Gray, because like, that's near and dear to me. Just 2.5 weeks ago, I was sharing a house with Bruce at IPSC Nationals in Arizona.
Yeah.
I mean, Great Guns has been a sponsor of mine personally as a competitive shooter for five years now, or close to 5 years. So I love like this like whole like complete circle coming around, like, you know, get to know you and hear a story like that. That's like so random. You're just like, you're just on a normal, you know, shift, and then you just bump into this guy, and now he's a huge influence on me.
That's way cool. Did he work on your H&Ks?
Yes. Yeah. And
how did you end up? So you were shooting Gray Guns or like SIGs or?
I shot SIGs for like 6 years, and then last year, at the start of this year when we got tied in with HK.
You got the HK deal, man. That's way cool.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I mean, first person I called was Bruce when they approached me, and I was like, hey, what do you think? And he's like, and I knew that Bruce has worked on HKs for years. But mostly on like their traditional, like DASA type guns and like the old P7s and things like that. And he's like, well, actually this would be a great fit, 'cause we want to do more stuff for like the VP9, which is what I am shooting. So,
nice.
So happy to work with both Bruce and his team, and also with HK for sure.
That's way cool.
Yeah.
I got a P30. Yeah. I got a P30 LEM. I got to send off to him.
Yeah.
So it's a Todd Green kind of. So Todd, you know, told me all the stuff to get done on it and get, how to get it set up actually. Yeah. So he got it set up for me. So it was really nice. So it was kind of a cool, little pistols. Yeah.
That's cool.
There was a period of time where for some reason when Todd was doing his different tests, I was ending up with the same gun for work. You know, when he did the M&P Mondays, that's when we went away from Glock to M&P for a while. And then we had some issues with Smith & Wesson with customer service and some other things. And then our guns were starting to get shot out. So it was time for new ones. And Glock came out, and Glock was like, hey, here's the deal. And they just – Glock's just got a killer deal. They they know how to deal with the LE side of the house. They gave us an offer we couldn't refuse. We ended up going back to the Glocks right about the same time Todd was doing the G19, starting the G19 journey, which was shortly before he passed. But so it was kind of interesting. I'm like, dude, how are we – joined at the hip? Like, what is this weird connection that whatever gun you have, I end up with it, you know? But the P30, the LEM setup, that was totally that wasn't for work. That was just Todd was like, hey, man, try this. You know, try this out. This is the setup. Try this out. And so just such a sweet pistol, man.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with that.
Such a cute. Yeah.
Yeah, we got one in the safe here. So.
Yeah, I don't have any time on the VP9s. Not really. I've had them in classes, but I don't really have any time on them.
Mm-hmm.
So, but they seem to be.
I've been liking it.
And really nice striker gun.
Yeah, striker-fired gun, you know. I mean, simple and just, I mean, they've just run really well for me so far. And
yeah.
I seem to shoot them okay. I mean, I'm still, you know, when you come 6+ years of one gun, and before that I shot Glocks for, I don't know, 5 or 6 years. And, you know, I come over to something else. Like, I'm still learning it a little bit. But, I will say that all the mistakes I made, which were several, if not many, at IPSC Nationals a few weeks ago, had nothing to do with the gun. I will absolutely saying like that. The gun was great.
Yeah.
The gun shot great.
Wasn't the pistol.
It was all right here.
VP9, yeah. Right. The VP9, is that the paddle mag release or is it the button?
So they actually have both. So
what do you prefer?
I've got the push button. That was one thing I was like, you know, if I don't have to retrain all of this, that would be preferable. And they're like, no problem. We'll send you the push button ones. So I'm like, okay, that was easy.
Yeah. Very cool.
So I don't know that they have that available yet for things like the P30. I don't know if they even see so much a market for that there, but I think that the VP9 is a little bit of a crossover to, you know, that's probably one of the hangbacks for some people. They're like, you know, that might consider adopting something like an HK VP9. They go, paddle, you know? Yeah. So I think they started to come out with the push button models, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago. And they're gradually getting a little bit more readily available because for a while they're kind of a bit of a unicorn, but I think you can find them now.
Cool.
Yep.
I like the paddle. One of the things that I get all the time is what pistol do you recommend for left-handed people? You know, and I always recommend the H&Ks because of that paddle. Like, it's truly ambidextrous. The paddle can be actuated from either side of the trigger guard, and the slide lock can be actuated from either side. So you don't have to do anything. You don't have to switch anything over. You know, the Glock, the Gen 5 Glocks now, I guess you could switch the magazine release over to the other side. And the M&Ps, you could always do that. You know, just switch the mag release over. But for a pistol that just comes out of the box, you don't have to do anything to it. You're not mechanically, you know, minded, so you don't want to tackle that challenge. Here you go.
Yeah.
Take it out of the box and just start shooting.
It is definitely one of the strengths, the selling points of those for sure. Yeah, in fact, I just had that conversation with some folks at the a girl on the gun national conference was teaching at last weekend, and I worked the HK demo, you know, firing line there for a bit. And a couple of ladies came in that were left-handed, and it's like, here you go. I mean, you know, and some of them would be like, what's this paddle thing, you know? And you kind of explain how it works, and they're like, oh, yeah, that's not, you know, like it clicks, it makes sense. And a little bit, I mean, you just need to learn how to do it and some reps, you know, do some dry fire, and before long, you're up and going. So.
Yeah, Todd thought it was fast. Todd thought it was faster than a regular mag release. And Simon Golub has said similar things. Like, it's fast. Man, it's faster than a regular mag release.
Yeah.
You know, it just – your index finger just drops right on it, and it's gone. Mag's out.
Yeah.
You know? So, that's cool. You don't have to shift your hand a lot. I like that.
Yep.
The part I like about it is not having to shift my hand. I hate having a pistol that I have to, like, flip around in my hand during the mag release. That part – because then when you flip it back, you know, it's like, do you have a good grip or not? You know, sometimes you do, sometimes you don't.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just that consistency of once it settles back in my hand, I get both hands on and start driving. I just wanted to be consistent, you know.
Yep.
So I don't know if you ever noticed that, you know, when you do like one reload, one or two reload, two drills, it's always after the reload that people tank.
Yep.
And I've always thought it's because they shifted the gun. They had the gun set, they shifted it, you know, I don't know.
I definitely think it's a factor. 100%.
Yeah.
I definitely think there's a lot of truth to what you said there. I appreciate also that you shared the perspective of, you know, referring to and drawing from the competitive side of different disciplines. And while you didn't really go into it so much on the combatives or BJJ side or anything like that, I definitely see that tie in, and obviously you do too. I know that you've been involved on the competitive side in martial arts as well. So kind of actually wanted to hear you expound upon that a little bit. Like, what are some of the things that we see from, like, say, MMA and, you know, whatnot that you feel like have been a positive influence on, you know, what we eventually hopefully take to the streets as well?
Yeah, I think what we've realized is that there should be an emphasis on grappling to some degree for most people. And the reason for that is it gives you the ability to dial it up and down. You know, my coach, Chris Howder, he's one of the original Dirty Dozen. So the 12 people who got their black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu that were non-Brazilian. So I think he was third or fourth guy outside of Brazil to get a black belt. And it's cool to talk with him about that kind of stuff and kind of go back through the thinking and the process to develop your concepts and your principles that it's going to drive your jiu-jitsu, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I articulated that very well, but it's basically, you know, why am I doing what I'm doing? So I want to have a really clear why. So Chris has a saying that we want to think street, train the sport, practice the art. So in the beginning, you come in and maybe you had somebody road rage on you. Maybe you had a bad encounter with somebody at work or at a bar or something where you're thinking about self-defense. Like, I want to know how to defend myself. I want to know how to fight. And then over time, you know, that's the beginning of your journey, and that's cool. But over time, you start to go more towards the sport side because you can train the sport forever. You know, you can, it's infinite. There's no end to solving the puzzle of a fight. And then at some point in there, you start to practice the art, meaning it becomes more than just jiu-jitsu, becomes more than just boxing or Muay Thai, but also it becomes who you are. So, you know, I should be able to look across the mat and see you rolling and be like, oh, that's Riley. I know him. I might not be able to see you clearly, but through your movements, I'm like, oh, that's how he expresses jiu-jitsu. That's him. Yeah. That's his art. You know, and it should be different than mine. And so with that, you know, when people first come in and they're thinking about the street, you have to get across to them that probably one of the hardest things to do is knock somebody out, you know, to land a clean shot without getting hit yourself, without taking damage. And so maybe one of the safest places to be is in the clinch. Now, there's going to be people that want to argue about that, and I understand the arguments, you know, because I've argued both sides of it. But one of the safest places to be is in the clinch with me in control of my opponent's hands. Now, they can't gun up. They can't get a knife. They can't access tools of any kind, and they can't hit me.
Yep.
You know, I'm inside the range of their power shots. I've shut down most of the stuff. If I have good head position, they can't hit me. They can't headbutt me. And if I attack their base, I can get them off their feet, drop them on the ground, and I can do one of two things. I can get the heck out of there, which is never a bad thing. Or I can stay there if necessary and hold them in place and maybe talk to them a little bit. Like, hey, man, look, I don't want to fight. Like, let's just calm down and talk about this, you know, or whatever way you want to de-escalate. Mm-hmm. But, and so from the sports side is where we get to practice that. I get to practice against people who don't want to cooperate. They don't want me to win. They want to win. They're trying to not hurt me, but they are trying to simulate hurt. You know, I get to tap and they'll let go, hopefully, but hopefully I tap soon enough, you know, but they, you know, so all the pieces are in place minus the risk of serious injury or death. Like that, we try to negate as much as possible. And so I get to test myself over and over and over again. And what you find works in the gym pretty much works outside of the gym because it doesn't take, you don't need me standing over you to go, hey man, bite him.
Right.
You know,
right.
Hey man, punch him in the nuts. You know, like you don't need me to stand there and say, hey, put your thumb in his eye. You know, like I don't have to tell you the dirty tactics. You will probably figure that out. But if you have good position, you are controlling your opponent. They are not in control of their own body because you've attacked the two priorities for jiu-jitsu, which is base and posture. So I've made it so that you're not balanced. You feel like you're constantly falling. I've attacked your posture. So your, what we call it, your kinesthetic chain is not strong. Like you can't, if you were to deadlift, if I've got you in such a posture that if you were to deadlift right now, it would injure you, then you probably can't throw me, you know? So I've got your posture broken, got your base busted. You're in no position to hurt me. So I'm going to win. And that's prioritized on the sports side. And then that helps to inform the street side. So dirty tactics are a thing. Yes. Weapons are a thing. Yes. But hand control negates the weapons. So if I learn to control the hands, not let you have free rein or free use of your hands, and I'm staying inside and in tight, and I've got your hands, what are you going to do to me? You know, I've got your hands locked up, got you tied up. I've got inside control. You can't bite me. You can't, I mean, you can spit on me, but you can't, you know, like, you know, you can't hit me, can't stab me, can't shoot me. So now what, you know?
Yep.
And with a little bit of tweaking, once I have an athlete that can do those things really well against another athlete, now it's just a little bit of tweaking. Now all I got to do is every now and then we're going to do some multiple opponent drills where you and I are going against each other and we decide ahead of time that a third guy is going to be on my side and his only job is to touch your back. That's it. If he touches your back, you have to do 5 burpees. And so now we're going to go. Kind of like we did at the Guardian conference, right? Where now we're going to move around and but you still have to keep your head up, get good head position, keep your head up and look around. And now you're aware, okay, cool. Another person could get involved. So not only do I need to have control of this person, but I also need to be able to be aware of my surroundings. And now the last thing we would add is how do I access a tool? Because if it's multiple opponents, I'm probably going to need a tool to solve this problem. You know, it's not like Kung Fu theater where I can fight 30 guys and then go have some tea, you know, like it's like
right.
One opponent's going to be bad enough, you know, 2 opponents, really bad day, you know, I need a tool. So that's where I think, I don't know if that answers the question or not, yeah. But that's kind of how that side of the house informs the street.
Yep.
You know, you come in wanting to know how to fight, but the more you train the sport, the more you actually solve the street problem. Because you learn more about how to control a person. And then you mix in some striking. I think everybody should train as well-rounded as possible. I think everybody should train some sort of stand-up, some sort of grappling, and then obviously the weapons, you know. And then you add in some striking. Well, now you're probably going to be good to go, you know, in most situations you end up in. You should be okay, you know.
Yep.
And, you know, add some verbal skills and the ability to think ahead, see ahead, you know, kind of what Tom Gibbons talks about, who's around me, you know, who are they with and what are they doing?
Right.
You know, answer those questions and you should be able to solve most problems on the street.
Yep.
You know, plus also the other side too, with the sport is you become more adaptable, just like driving. You know, if you are able to successfully negotiate a field of race cars, you know, other guys driving, other guys competing for that position that you want, and you're able to keep yourself off the wall and not get tangled up in all that. And then you go out and drive on a regular freeway. Not too bad.
Yeah.
Not too much of a challenge. Like nobody's vying for your lane.
Right.
You know, like,
right.
They might cut you off because they're texting and eating and doing their makeup and not paying attention. But you also see them way ahead.
Yeah.
So that they don't even become a problem because you're so used to just seeing as far ahead as possible.
Yeah.
You know, and seeing and predicting what's going to happen.
Makes a lot of sense. I mean, the rules are different, the context is different, but like the actual driving challenge is not even close to what you're used to seeing.
Right. Yeah. So you just change it. The same with shooting, right? Yep. Like I give you, you know, I remember DR was one of the first ones that said to me, it's easy, man. And I'm like, so the street to the sport to the street is easy. You think it's easy. It's not that big of a leap. Why would it be? I'm like, okay, dude, you got to help me out here, you know? And he said, well, just think about it. When I go to shoot IDPA, what do we say? What are the rules? What's the course of fire? And let me go. Where do I load and make ready? Right? I go to shoot USPSA. I get a walkthrough. What are the rules? What's the course of fire? Where do I load and make ready? You know, three gun, same. You know, pick any shooting sport. World steel shoot off, same. I'm going to stand in this box and we're going to get it on. And whoever has the last plate standing, lost. You know, and so when we get to the street, all right, well, what's the problem that I have to solve? What has to be solved right now? All right, well, there's a dude by my car. There's another dude over there. All right, which one do I solve first? You know, and you learn how to problem solve at the speed of life in the sport. You know, I learned how to roll at the speed of life and box and avoid the takedown or hit a takedown and get thrown. And in the middle of the throw, I'm already thinking about what am I going to do when I hit the ground? My brain isn't thinking, oh, I just got thrown. You know what I mean? I don't have that thought process. My thought process is, all right, here we go. I'm in the air, but we're going to land. And when we land, I'm moving. You know, so it makes you more adaptable, which is what you have to be to survive a street encounter. So I think that's the piece that we kind of lose sight of. And I think if we could ever get everybody on the same page when it comes to that kind of stuff, we could actually do a lot. We could make a lot of progress. Because then instead of fighting each other in a way that tears each other down, we are competing with each other in a way that builds everybody up. Like, I think this is a better idea. Well, let's test it. I think this is a better idea. Let's test it. That's a complete garbage idea. Well, let's test it, you know, as opposed to this is my idea. Your idea sucks. And that's all I got to say about it.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
It's like, that's not how progress happens, man. And if you're truly interested in keeping all your teeth in your head and not getting extra holes in your body, then we probably should be pressure testing more things and more open to pressure testing things, you know, and not just, yeah, I could go off on that too, man. But just because I have a feel as a cop, as a former cop, I'm retired, man, as a former cop. And hopefully I don't hurt too many feelings. But I feel like for me to come out here and say, this is what I did in 2014 as a SWAT guy, 10 years ago, is still relevant, still realistic, and this is what we should be doing. That's just, if I haven't done it in the last 5 years and I'm not still currently doing it, I shouldn't be talking about it. Mm. It's not relevant. It's not recent. It's not realistic.
Yep.
You know, I mean, I'm not going to get too far into what guys are doing or what, like I have people I talk to every now and then are still active, and what they're doing now for that kind of stuff to deal with a warrant or, you know, a homicide warrant or, you know, a guy barricaded or things like so far different from when I was there. It would be ridiculous for me to talk about it as if I'm an expert now. I'm not, you know? And so I kind of feel like it's the same with a lot of that where it's like, well, you know, and this is a true story. When I first started, this guy tried to kill me. And Claude Werner talks about if you don't, in your first 18 months or 2 years of service in either fire, police, or military, if you're not in a situation where you almost die, you will never get bit by the training bug. You will never understand the necessity and urgency of training. You will never become a training junkie. Fortunately for me, I already was a training junkie because I was competing in MMA and jiu-jitsu and all that stuff and judo. But then I had a guy try to kill me my first month on my own, out of FTO, I'm on my own. This guy tries to kill me. My gun ends up under my own chin. Just a catastrophe on many levels on my part. But it would be silly for me. That was what, 1998, 99? That would be silly for me to right now in 2024 sit here and say, this is what I did in that situation, that one time, and this is all you need to know.
Yeah.
And anything that you say counter to that is garbage because this one time at Bandcamp, I got it on and this is what worked. Right.
Right.
And I just, you know, so a lot of times I look at it and even I, you know, my wife a while back is like, you should talk more about stuff you've done in your career. And I told her, I said, why? It's not relevant. You know, what guys are doing now is way beyond that. It doesn't apply. I mean, maybe as like history, you know, like, hey, this is what we did back then. You know, you guys are way past that now. I mean, you know, why would I go, why would I walk down a hallway now, you know, searching for somebody when I could just throw eyeballs down there, you know, like these little robotic cameras and just toss them down there and let them get shot at, you know, I guess, you know, that's a smarter use of resources and all that. But, you know, that wasn't around when I was there, you know? So I feel the same with happens in the combatives community. And when I say combatives, I mean everything in the classic sense of combatives, you know, edge weapons, impact weapons, firearms, everything, improvised weapons, empty hands, all of it, medical, everything that it takes to be an adept, to be a capable citizen. What? Why would I argue so vehemently over a position based on one incident a long time ago? You know, like it's just, I think I would rather discuss, well, hey, today we set this scenario up. We had 10 guys go through it, and this is what we found. 6 out of 10 times, this worked. You guys take the same scenario with your group, try it, and then let me know what happens and see if your averages are the same or is this something just unique to us, right? And then that's how we push the art forward and the study of this thing forward. And that's how we make good people safer. You know, they're actually getting recent, realistic and relevant information based on what we're testing and pressure testing right now, you know?
Yeah.
Man, if that makes sense.
Oh, that's good stuff, my man. That's good stuff. Yeah, yeah. I was drinking it up for sure. Yes. So I think we need to at this point talk a little bit about, yeah, I know I've got folks listening that have probably not trained a single day in their lives of, you know, anything to hand to hand or combatives related. So, and again, I witnessed you as you worked, I think, masterfully with some inexperienced folks at our conference last year, which by the way, I mean, those of you that are coming to the Guardian conference this year, I mean, if you want to get exposure to that, get your feet wet, kind of get a sense for, you know, what, I mean, hopefully what you can expect training wise. I mean, it's a great load, you know, judgmental kind of like low key environment that you could come and do this and take some training blocks with Paul. And I think get a lot out of it and then kind of have maybe a little bit of an idea of where to go next. But let's talk about that where to go next kind of piece. Someone's thinking, okay, yeah, this stuff that Paul is saying makes sense. You're right. I should get some training in this. Is there a particular direction? Is it a particular martial art? Is it, I mean, like, what is your advice for, because I mean, to me, I think I view, and I've got a little bit of experience there, not a ton. I mean, I was a little baby, you know, reserve cop for 8 years. And, you know, we did some hand-to-hand training and I did some Krav Maga as part of that experience too. And, but I look at the kind of martial arts and combatives world and it can be very overwhelming, much like somebody that's just getting into guns for the first time. You're just like, I don't even know where to go, where to start, who to talk to, who to trust.
Right.
So, I mean, I know that's a loaded question. There's a lot that could be explored there, but I mean, you're obviously part of a great gym up there in Idaho. And I mean, again, from everyone I know that I trust, saying wonderful things about the work you guys are doing, what do you think are the recipes for success for training? What is the product or the service that you guys are trying to provide as part of your gym? And because I assume that you're doing it in a way that you think this is the right way, right? Or else you wouldn't be doing it. So then, and then let's just like translate that into what are some of the things that folks should be looking for if they're looking to get involved?
Yeah. So that's a good question, man. And I get that one a lot. one of the first things, so just from the looking at a gym perspective, you know, I'm biased, going to admit it up front, right? But I want a good MMA style gym. So I want a gym that has a good stand-up program and a good ground or grappling program. So stand-up, clinch, and ground. I want people to have good skills, at least enough in each range. And then you can always focus on the thing you love the most. I have friends that only want to do Muay Thai, but they also are a blue belt. They can handle themselves mm-hmm. if it goes to the ground, but right. they just love Muay Thai and vice versa, you know? So with that said, so some sort of jiu-jitsu, MMA style gym, fight sport. And then what I want to look for, because what we try to build is a community, a bomb-proof culture where people feel they can come in here, and it's in a strange way, one of the most vulnerable things you can do is walk on that mat. You're about to get strangled by a complete stranger. You know, you're trusting that they're going to let go when you tap, you know, which is a whole other trust fall. And so it's super important that we have a culture there that is supportive, that we are dedicated to the concept that JFK was famous for saying. Somebody told me it was in a boathouse in Boston, or Waterford. But anyway, the saying was rising tide lifts all the boats. So if I get better, you get better. If you get better, I get better. So I'm never trying to tear you down. I'm always trying to build you up. I'm always trying to push you to the next level, because I know in doing that, I'm going to have to go to the next level too. And so we try our best to build that culture and have that just be the overall vibe that you feel when you're there, is that in here, I can do anything. I can mess up and nobody's going to think anything right. of it. You know, I can look like a complete fool, so to speak, because most people in their head are like, I'm going to look like an idiot. I don't know how to roll. I don't even know how to put my boxing gloves on. You know what I mean? Or shin guards or whatever. And it's like, that's stressful to an adult. You're successful in every area of your life, but here you don't even know how to wrap your hands. You know, we got to teach you how to tie your belt. But I want them to be completely comfortable in that situation where they feel like, hey, I can turn to anybody around me and go, hey, man, you show me how to wrap my hands and not get laughed at, not get treated like what a dumb question. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Or like today, I had a lady's like, I got to teach foundations class, which is our beginner's class, and she didn't know how to tie her belt. And so she's trying to tie her belt. She'd gone through the part where they show you how to tie the belt, but she's tying it and the belt's ended up straight up and down because she's doing this. So I go, hey, let me show you something. When you tie the belt, pull down and out like diagonally, and it'll make the tails of your belt lay like this, you know? And she goes, oh, that looks like everybody else's now. I'm like, yeah, I got you, man. You know, but that's the environment we want, where I can have a lady who's successful in every other area of her life feel comfortable coming out there and being like, hey, I know I run a business in town. I know a lot of people know me. I can't figure out this belt, you know, right. and just have people be like, no problem. So that's first, the culture, right? Like, how do you build that? I want that. And then, well, how do we see that? How do I walk into a gym and see that without spending time there? And what I tell people is there should be a broad collection of society. You should have little kids. You should have women, older folks. You should have a little bit of everybody.
Yeah.
If all you have in there is 20 to 25-year-old guys that – or they just want to punch people in the face, which I love those guys. I was that guy. But they have to be in their own room. They want to compete. That's awesome. If they can't tone it down to roll with the regular folks and regular classes, then you just keep them off to the side. So that's not an indictment of those guys or a gym that has those guys. But you want to see the rest too. Like we have a guy in our noon class, we're getting ready to bump him up to purple belt. He's got one lung. He's 72 years old. He was a doctor. Mm. Then he was an attorney. He was also a helicopter pilot. Mm. You know, this guy's an accomplished man, but he's also 72 years old, has one lung, and has beat cancer's ass twice. You know, do I want a 25-year-old competitive MMA guy rolling with him who has no throttle? No. Right. But in our gym, I don't have to worry about him being on the mat. I know he's going to be all right because I know everybody else, they're going to give him a good game. They're going to roll hard with him, but they're also going to look out for him. And the younger guys who are those savages and want those hard rounds, they're not going to go find him. They're going to go find the other guys like them. So you want a gym that has all of those things. You want a gym that has a good competition side of the house. You also want a gym that has the soccer moms, for lack of a better descriptor, your normal, like, I'm going to do jiu-jitsu while my kids in the kids class. Mm. You want them to feel safe too. You want them to feel like they can walk on the mat and it's just as much their mat as it is the guy that's fighting in Bellator. Mm. Like, this is just as much my home as it is the guy that's a world champion. And so that's what you want to see on the mat. You want to see a good mix of everything. And if you have that, join it. You know, if you don't see that, you might want to just look elsewhere. Now, I realize like some people in some places, they don't have a lot of options, but I really would be careful with that because I've been that guy. I've been the guy who was like, I tell this story and I'm ashamed. It's embarrassing. Mm-hmm. But my brother and I ran the gym together. My brother's always had a better sense of how to build that community and that culture. And when I was competing, my brother talks about he would race me to the door when new people would come in. Because my first question to them was, are you interested in competing? And if they said anything other than yes, I would turn around and walk off. Because in my mind, I'm not wasting my time.
Yeah.
You don't want to get after it. You don't want to compete. Like, what's wrong with you? You know, what, are you scared? And I would walk off. Mm. My brother, on the other hand, was like, dude, you know, like, mm-hmm. that's not how this works, you know? And so, you know, thank God I got out of that phase. Mm. You know, it didn't last long. But so I do understand those guys, you know, and I do hope that they will snap out of it sooner rather than later. And I also feel an immense embarrassment and shame on being one of those guys. So when I tell people to look for what to look for in a gym, I always tell them, like, it's good if they have that mix of competitors and non-competitors. But if I had to direct somebody to a gym of the two, I would probably direct them a little more towards the place that has fewer competitors, but more of everybody. Mm-hmm. Because I know that place has a good culture.
Because the culture is good. Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to flourish when culture is bad, right?
It is, man. It really is. And like I said, I'm ashamed of that period of my life. That was not the best time for me as a human being. And I definitely did not build culture. I did not. I learned the hard way. Mm. You know, like, I did not build culture. I remember we moved gyms. We had moved locations, rather. And our partner, we had a kind of an angel investor, silent partner. He bought another building. And so we were moving to the new building. And my brother had this big box of papers. And I was like, what is that? He goes, these are waivers from people that have signed up. Mm. I'm like, are you kidding me? I'm like, we got like 100 people. That's like 400 waivers. Where are those people at? He goes, good question. You know, I was like, you know, mm-hmm. I just walked right into that. but at the same time, though, you know, I think back on that and I'm like, that's a lot of people. There's always attrition. But that's a lot of people that could have benefited from what we do that did not. Mm. And hopefully they found another place that had actual good culture and they got on the path. But, you know, it's just one of those things where you're like, man, you know. So when I recommend places to, or what to look for, that's what I always tell people. Like, find a place that has a lot of everybody, you know, like even if it's a smaller gym, even if it's a place with less than 100 students, if, you know, they've got 20, 30 kids in their kids program, the kids program's banging and thriving, and then they've got 20, 30, you know, guys of all ages, and then 10, 20 females, you know, of all ages, that's a good gym. They got it figured out.
Yeah.
You know, they got it. They've got a good spot. They've got it figured out. They got a good culture, and you'll be able to train the sport, you know, understand the street, and eventually practice the art.
Yeah.
And you'll get all the benefits from it, you know,
cool.
without the meathead tearing your arm off,
yeah.
you know,
right.
So
yeah.
Unfortunately,
I like it. And I imagine too, that, I mean, like one of the things that I'm really passionate about getting people into competitive shooting, because I think there's a lot of benefits that could be had from that.
Heck yeah.
You know, and like the common thing that comes up when talking to people about that is like, actually this is really common. I'll hear someone say, well, I'm not good enough for that yet. You know, like I need to prepare myself a little bit more before I'm ready for that. And I'm just like, yeah. Look, no, just show up. Just
show up.
Like whatever gear you have, like show up with that gear. And I promise you, like if something's wrong with that gear, somebody there will like hook you up, set you up, loan you something that you
need. Absolutely.
You know what I mean? And so I've always just like, no, just sign up, show up, do the thing. Because if you don't get started today, like you probably won't get started. And
yeah,
that's
the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's why we've started a 8-week fitness program. Mm. So we have an 8-week fitness program because so many people will say, well, I want to get in shape first, you know, mm-hmm. kind of like on the competitive shooting side of the house. Well, I need to buy this first. No, you don't.
Yeah.
You know, you need a safe holster, a way to hold your magazines, and a safe pistol. And if you don't have those things, like you said, I guarantee if you show up there, somebody will have those things.
Yep.
And they'll be willing to loan them to you. But it's just on the unarmed side of the house, it's always fitness. I need to get in shape first. No, you don't. I promise you. I've had guys come in that run ultras because of being part of that community. I've had guys come in that run ultras and they'll get on the mat and 5 minutes in, they're like, oh my God, I'm going to puke. I'm like, I told you. I want to find the guy who is a little soft, a little fluffy. I want to find that guy and drag him over there and go, listen, this guy just ran, you know, whatever, you know, 100-mile race. He's about to puke 5 minutes in. But it doesn't matter. It's a different kind of thing, you know. Plus there's the efficiency factor where just by doing it, you learn how to be more efficient with your movement and conserve energy and not burn yourself out. You're never going to learn that lifting weights and all the other stuff. You're only going to learn it by getting out there and just doing it. Mm. You know, like George Foreman did not look like a poster child for strength and conditioning at 60 years of age. And he's kicking the crap out of guys in their 20s, in their prime.
Yeah.
You know, so it's about efficiency, man. And you only get that from being in there doing it.
That's a fair point.
Just like you and I, we go to run a course of fire, you're going to be so much more faster. Even if I'm shooting faster, you're going to be faster and have a better time because you're going to have better hit factor and you're going to be more efficient because you do it more than me.
Yeah.
You're going to move through there like you're on ice, you know, just like skating through there, and I'm going to be herky jerky, you know, stopping in the wrong place, starting in the wrong, you know, like we all seen it.
Yeah.
Know?
Yep.
And that's all it is. It's just that efficiency from doing it. Yep. And that there's no other way to get it, you know, like just go do it. And I like what you said. I've actually experienced that. My first, after Bruce Gray, I went and shot IDPA at the time, cause that was the only club close to me that was open on the nights when I had off from work.
Yep.
And it's like a Thursday night. And I went there. All I had was my police gear. That's it. I just had police stuff and a couple boxes of ammo because I didn't know what else to do. And they were totally cool. They were like, all right, man, well, in the future, you know, we'd appreciate, you know, like the guns in a box, everything's safe, you know, empty, mm-hmm. you know, come in here. We like to keep everything cold so we don't have any NDs back here and all that stuff. You know, they were real cool with me. And, you know, they just explained to me like, hey, you can shoot with your gear as like that, your law enforcement gear, you can shoot with it like that. If you want to shoot concealed, then you have to move the magazines back behind the hip and the pistol. And they broke everything down for me. Yeah. They're like, hey, if you, you know, and they let me shoot it with my gear. And then they were like, hey, if you want to shoot like regular, like concealed, they loan me a vest. I know people make fun of the vest thing, but they loan me like a vest and a holster and some it was fun. I was like, oh, that's cool, man. I'll go back out there and shoot it again, you know, and went back through it concealed. And it was an awesome first experience. And I think it, you know, that should be everybody's first experience. I don't know if that's everybody's first experience, but, and it's the same for the gym. Mm-hmm. Like, we want people's first experience to be that they were welcomed, that people were helpful, and that they come off of it excited and just can't wait to get back in here and do it again.
Yeah.
Like, I want them to leave the gym going, when can I come back? When can I do this again? You know, like Jill talked about with Sophia in her podcast, she's like, I just feel like this guy is like my new best friend. You know, the first class she did, she's like, I was getting choked out and swept and all that. And I just felt like, this guy's my new best friend. This is so much fun, you know? And I'm like, that's the experience I want everybody to have with all of the combative sports, because all the combative sports have a sport side, or all the combatives have a sport side.
Yep.
You know, there's a combative sport that feeds into it. And like, man, what better way to get people into this, keep people in it, and also improve people than to get them competing as soon as possible. You know?
Yeah.
Like, a fast first hit is a fast first hit.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
You know?
That's really great perspective. We have just a little more time left, and I think I want to make sure we use this time to talk about the action. Yeah. And you started kind of, I think, segueing towards that, whether you realize it or not, I don't know, but talk about fitness. Because I know that you are also super passionate about that. And I know that from what I've seen from you and like conversations I've heard from you, you have had a little bit of a different physique, at different, times of your life. I remember seeing a post from you on social media that like you had like a couple different pictures of yourself at different times. And I'm like, that's pretty fascinating, you know, just to kind of see how you've evolved, I mean, I think some of that was purposeful with different things that you were going after at the time, but
definitely.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's clearly something that you also get. So, I mean, tying in with the combatives piece, and I really liked what you said as far as like, well, I need to get more fit before I get into, you know, BJJ, let's say.
Right.
And like, I've definitely sort of like felt that pressure a little bit myself. But it's so like, it's really good to hear you say that. So let's talk fitness. I mean, like, what do you think are some of the, I guess, major, pitfalls for fitness that people find themselves in, and kind of like, what's been like your guiding principles yourself? I mean, to keep yourself fit. I mean, you're obviously a very fit guy, and I don't know exactly what age you are. Not that that's necessarily relevant, but like you look great.
56.
I mean, dude.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I'll be 57 in November.
Awesome.
So I'm 56 now. I feel like you said, I've been able to move my weight up and down based on my goals at the time. If I wanted to do strongman competitions or run ultras or compete in MMA or whatever the case may be, I've always been able to move my weight and my body around. And part of that is just training. I've never not trained. I've had times where I was not fit due to illness or health things. You know, after my aneurysm, that was really tough. Opiates wrecked me. You know, that's a whole other subject, but, you know, they're just evil, but they, I mean, necessary evil, I guess, but that I was always able to move. And most of that was just understanding calories and their role and then the macro breakdown of the calories. So macros are, for those that don't know, and I'm not trying to be like, hey, you don't know what I know. But sometimes people are like, what's a macro? Mm-hmm. So macros are proteins, fats, and carbs. So the big three, you know, like the big rocks, yep. you know. And so what and just manipulating those percentages. So you have whatever amount of calories you eat every day, that's 100%, right, of your calories. And then the macros are, let's say for protein, I'm going to eat 35% of that 100% is going to be protein. 45% is going to be carbs, and then 20% will be fats. And I'm just going to track it. Just get an app, whatever app you like, and I'm going to track it. Now, back in the day, it was a little harder. We had to write it down. You had a food log and mm-hmm. had to like pen and paper, you know. But I just, over the years, was always able to manipulate my body composition and my weight by moving those numbers around. So if I wanted to compete at 190 pounds, I would probably eat around 1900 to 2000 calories. But if I was coming down in weight, I would prioritize protein and minimize fat and carbs and just, you know, not really carnivore, whatever label you want to put on it, but just really focusing on getting the protein in mm-hmm. because that's going to help me build and hold on to whatever muscle I have while shedding fat, you know, with all the cardio yeah. and sprinting and stuff. So that's kind of how I moved my body around, and the people that I train, that's how we do it. And then also just prioritizing, I think making it fun was the other thing too, you know, making it so that this isn't something that's just drudgery for me. This mm-hmm. is something that's fun, whether it's going out and just like today, I'm going to go broad jump a football field. You know, I'm just going to broad jump up mm-hmm. and then jog back and do, I'm going to do that 10 times, you know, that's going to be my cardio, you know, or something of that nature. Just always making it fun, always keeping it interesting has been one of the things that's kept me at it since I was 14 or 15 years old is when I started doing all this stuff. Mm. And so I started training people in my 20s because people would ask me like, hey, you know, will you take me and show me how to work out, or will you do these different things? And so to your question about, you know, the challenges and things like that, that people face, what I've noticed. And so I'm 56 now. So that's what, 30 plus years of training people, you know, in the fitness side of the house. Here's what I've noticed. They fall off the wagon in their eyes. They have a bad meal in their eyes. Like, I ate ice cream.
Right.
Oh man, that's it. I'm done. And they just abandon ship instead of looking at it like, okay, we're on day one again. Yep. This is day one, right? And I really, you know, when I train people, I really hit that hard. Like, you are back on track with your next meal.
Yeah.
That's the place where I see people, the biggest pitfalls, the biggest cascade or spiraling out that I see happen for folks. I wish I could get inside their head and tell them, listen, you know, I'm 20 or 10 or however many years down the road ahead of you. And I'm promising you right now, listen to me. Your future self is talking, right? Like that ice cream you just had, or whatever, that meal you just had that wasn't the best for you or is off your diet plan, doesn't matter. Get back on it with your next meal.
Yeah.
Get back on it. You know what I mean? Like, don't make this a trend. This was a one-off, you know? And even with the guys that I deal with that are, you know, some of the guys that train with me and gals that work with me are trying to get sober, trying to turn their life around, trying to transform themselves, and dealing with some demons. And, you know, we all have at some point in time had something we struggled with. And I tell them the same thing, like, hey man, okay, so you had a drink. It's been 103 days since your last drink. And today you had a drink. Cool, bro. Day one.
Yep.
Let's go. You know, drink some water. Quit being a crybaby. You know what I mean? Change your diaper or whatever it is that you're being a baby about, and let's go back to work, you know? And this one time is not the end of the story. It only is if you decide it is. So I tell, it's the same with the fitness side of it too. You missed a workout or the workout didn't go well. It's okay, right? Tomorrow, we're going to hammer it. Tomorrow, we're going to get it. Tomorrow, you're going to come in with a chip on your shoulder because yesterday you wimped out on your sets or you didn't do as many sets as you're supposed to do or you skipped something. Today, we're getting it. We're going to make you pay for being a slacker yesterday. We're going to get it. And that's kind of how I look at it. Yeah. So I don't know if that answered the question or not, but that's kind of where
I think that's amazing advice because I was thinking about that very thing too, even as I was asking the question earlier, just because like I've definitely experienced that in my own life, you know, and you slip the one time and you just like, well, you know, it's all over now, right? Or, what? Go ahead.
I'll get back on it Monday.
Right.
Or I'll get back on Monday, you know, or right. That's it. You know, I knew it, you know, all right, fine. 1 week. And then on the first of the month, I'll get back on it. And the first never comes, you know, like it never comes. You got to do it now, man.
Yep.
Do it now, you know, get back on track. You know, I think it's part of that adaptability we were talking about earlier too.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
that's a great time.
You're going to get knocked down. Yeah, you're going to get knocked down. What makes you think you're not going to have a bad day? What makes you think you're not going to get knocked down? That's like me going into a fight and then being upset that I got punched in the face. Like, it's part of it.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to fall, man. You're going to slip. The key is don't stay down. Refuse to stay down. Refuse to stay in that mess. Like, refuse to. And I tell people, too, I'm like, look, man. And I think I wrote about this recently on social media. And it's like, I tell people all the time, I'm going to believe in you more than your own mom. Like, cause I know I've trained more people than your mom, unless your mom's like training thousands of people, you know, like I know what can happen, right? I've seen it before. I know if we do this, this, and this, you will receive this.
Yep.
Right. So, and I know you got it in you. So let's just stop boo babying about whatever mistake you made. I don't want to hear about it anymore. We discussed it. Let's go. Let's move on. You know, and I try my hardest to get that across to people because people, the other thing people want to do, and maybe you've experienced this too, is they want to continue to dwell on that mistake. They want to keep focusing on, oh man, I messed up. You know, I messed up. I can't believe I did that. Okay. I heard you the first 20 times you said it, but we're moving forward, dude. And if I'm moving forward, that means you can move forward. Because if I'm the guy that's training you and you basically just ignored what I told you to do and did your own thing anyway and screwed up, I'm willing to forgive and move forward. I'm not firing you. I'm not saying I'm never training you because you are uncooperative. What I'm saying is, let's go.
Yeah.
Stop talking about it and let's get going, man. Right? Stop beating yourself up about it. It's wasted energy.
Yeah.
You know, let's just get going.
Yeah, and I was thinking too that it's, I mean, perspective is an important thing to here too, because it's like, I mean, big picture. I mean, you can have one lousy meal, one massive bowl of ice cream or something. And like in the big picture, it's really a small thing if you just keep grinding away, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I look at it from back out and take a 10,000 foot view. Like, okay, so you had one meal in the midst of however many meals you're going to eat over the next 7 days. Come on, man. Mm-hmm. Let's go.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
Like, yeah, no, I don't want you to do that. You know, I don't want you to do it. For one, because you're going to beat yourself up about it. You're not going to feel good. It's probably going to wreck your gut because you've been eating clean.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, while you're feeling that tummy upset, well, that's all the beating up you need.
Yeah.
You know, like your body, body's going to let you know. Yeah. Your body's going to let you know, man. Now let's get your mind right. Let's get your head straight and let's get back at it. You know, let's get back to work. So I think, and that's one of the main things I focus on, you know, cause I focus a lot on mindset. And that's one of the pieces is your mindset has to be okay. You know, like I messed up. Let's go. Here's the lessons learned. You know, what caused me to mess up and drink when I haven't drank in 6 months? Oh, okay. Well, I got upset about work or a significant other or issues with my kids, whatever set me off. And instead of looking for solutions, I look for a problem. Okay. Well, in the future, we're looking for solutions. Yep. All right. How did you feel about what just happened? You feel terrible. Good. Your conscience is your guide, man. Now you know, right? That's God talking to you saying, don't be an idiot, right? So moving forward, next time you get in that situation, we're going to start looking at solutions instead of the problem, right? Like, how do I come up with a better way to interact with my kids? How do I come up with a better way to interact with my significant other? There's got to be an answer here that I didn't find before that doesn't involve a bottle, pills, or some other stupidness. You know, it's like, how do I do something constructive here? And sometimes that something constructive is I'm going to go for a run. I'm going to go for a run for 3 miles, clear my head, and then come back and try to look at this with fresh eyes. But, you know, and I tell people too, it's that whole, you know, one day thing, you know, 1 hour thing. Like sometimes, you know, you messed up, you fell on this part, you know, maybe you completely lost your mind and screamed at your kids in a way that just is not cool, you know, or screamed at your significant other in a way that's not cool, that breaks their trust. Like they don't feel safe with you now because you let the savage out. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, man, it's not the end of the world, but you do have some making up to do.
Yep.
And the way you make that up is moving forward, they never see that again.
Yeah.
Now you know, right? So moving forward, I'm going to make this a non-negotiable. Non-negotiables have to be the things that only we can control, right? So a non-negotiable moving forward is I will not raise my voice at my significant other in such a way that makes her feel like, whoa, you know, mm-hmm. like this dude, am I going to get hit? What's happening right now? You know, and causes her to feel fear. Or my kids, you know, I'm not going to do something around my kids that makes them feel like, is he in control? There's something bad about to happen, you know, like that's a non-negotiable. But we make those mistakes so that we learn, you know, and that's the piece I try to get across to people, whether it's your diet, your workout, whatever, all of it comes together. Because to me, that's fitness. You have to be mentally fit, emotionally fit, physically fit, spiritually fit. You have to have those pieces, right? And so for me, those things are all entwined and cannot be unentangled. There's just no way. So I don't know if that answers the question or not, but that's really the focus, man.
I mean, yeah, I'm just going to quote from your own bio on your social media that says, I help people transform themselves starting with mental toughness.
Yeah, definitely, man.
I mean,
right? That's it.
That's like the common thing that ties everything together, honestly, right? Is like your mental toughness, your ability to just – I mean,
yeah,
because like it's the mental game, because the mental game honestly is like one of the hardest things out of everything we do, whether it's shooting or combatives or whatever.
Yeah, it really is. Right. Like, and that's the non-negotiables. That's the things we set with ourselves. Like today, I'm going to dry fire for 20 minutes, no matter what. I'm going to dry fire for 20 minutes. And then we get to the end of the day. We're like, oh, I'm tired. It's been a long day and I don't feel like, you know, going out to my dry fire space and yep. doing all this and like mental toughness, man. That's where it's like, even in something that simple, are you really going to violate a non-negotiable? You said this is a non-negotiable. I will dry fire every day for the next 30 days for 20 minutes. Are you really going to violate that? Cause you want a little more. What do you want? That's more important than holding your word to yourself. Mm-hmm. There's nothing more important than that.
Yep.
And even though it seems silly or even superficial, like what's 1 day of dry fire? What's 20 minutes of dry fire? It's a deal you made with yourself, you know? And if you do skip on it, well, guess what? Tomorrow's day one. You still got 30 days. You still owe yourself 30 days because you made the deal with yourself.
Yeah.
You know, and that's it, man. Like you said, mental toughness, it's in everything we do. It is combative. Combatives begins with mental toughness.
Yeah.
You know, and just having that adaptive mindset that says, I will find a way. I believe in myself. I'm always betting on myself and I will find a way, you know, and hopefully people get that from me and or from whomever they're training with. And if that day ever comes where it's the worst day of their life, that belief is stuck on repeat in their head. Mm. I will find a way. I will survive this. I will find a way.
Yeah.
You know, like this isn't the end. You know,
I've been
whether it's a natural disaster, right. whether it's a natural disaster or, you know, somebody that shouldn't be on the street that they run into, they're going to survive it. They're going to come through it and they're going to be all right.
I've been a big believer of, I mean, you make a commitment with yourself. Let's say, like for instance, I'm going to dry fire every day, or I'm just going to go to the gym every day, or I'm going to, whatever it is. Right. I'll use the dry fire one as an example, because this is exactly an example I give in my classes I teach. In fact, I give a specific drill in my class and I say, if you will do this one thing 5 minutes a day for like 30 days, it actually doesn't even and I'll even say, like, it doesn't actually have to be even 30 days, probably. If, like, you just do this every day for five minutes a day for like 2 weeks, you'd probably be amazed at how much difference it makes in your skill. You know what I mean? And right. Like, we can always scale up and scale back things too, as we, like, if you do like one thing for 5 minutes, then how much easier does it become next week? You're like, oh, I guess I could do 10, you know? And then, like, the next week, you're like, I could do 15, you know? Right. And then maybe at some point in your life, you're going to the gym for 2 hours a day for, you know, 5 days a week, because that's like what you could do at that time in your life. But then, you know, you, step, you know, like, you get into a period of your life, you just get busier, and it's like, okay, scale it back a little bit. You know what I mean? Like,
ebbs and flows, right? Expanding and contracting. And I agree. Like you said, man, like, what else are you going to do anyway?
Right.
You know, like, throw your TVs out. You don't need them, you know, like, get rid of your TV, put something different in place, you know, like that 20, I'm going to scroll on social media for 20 minutes. Like, probably not, you know, it's probably going to end up being an hour, because you get lost in that tunnel of social media. And, or I could put a timer on my phone for 20 minutes or 5 minutes. Like you said, I'll put a timer on my phone for 5 minutes, put it on the table. I'm going to dry fire until my timer goes off, you know, non-negotiable. That's the deal I'm making with myself. I'm going to do that. And then in 2 weeks, I have this new skill or this improved skill. Like, was it worth it?
Yep.
Absolutely. Completely worth it. You know, but then that's what we were talking about earlier in the beginning, right? Why am I doing this? That makes the what and how easy. What am I going to do? How am I going to do it? That's easy, because my why is so powerful, you know, that this is why. So 5 minutes, easy.
Yeah.
Easy day.
Cool.
You know,
good stuff, my man. It's probably,
thanks.
It's been about 90 minutes, so should probably start wrapping this
up. Oh, nice.
Yeah. So Sophia. She must have heard, you referenced her earlier in the episode, and she must have heard that.
I said it three times. Poof.
So final, I don't know, just like final words, final advice. I mean, you just gave some really great advice, to be clear, but.
Yeah, man, if I can get across anything to people, is that just have an unwavering, unshakable belief in yourself. Just believe in yourself, man. Don't get down on yourself. Make mistakes. Shake it off. You know, one of the keys to learning is to fail fast and fail often, because through iteration, we figure out what works. That's how we learn how to ride a bike. You know, you fell off and fell off and fell off, and then all of a sudden you didn't, you know, because you figured it out. And just have that belief in yourself. Trust yourself. And don't be afraid to just go all in. That's the thing I see from people so often, is they live a life and you're in a combative space where we're doing hard things all the time. So what are you afraid of?
Yeah.
You know, like, why are you afraid to just be yourself and just be open to experiences and doing all these things? If I could get that across to anybody, just have this unshakable belief in yourself and then do whatever it is you want to do. You want to be a trainer. You want to train people how to shoot. You want to train people in CPR and stop the bleed, or you just want to teach people how to knit. I don't care. Right. But just believe that you can do it and then start doing it, you know? And the more we could get people to think like that and act like that and act on that, the world's going to be such a better place, man. The world would be such a much better place. Not that the world's a terrible place now, but I just feel like you see so many people who believed other voices, who believed the people that told them, you can't do that. You're not capable of that. You're not good at that. You've never been good at that. And one of the most beautiful things, the things I love the most about the gym and about teaching jiu-jitsu, is getting people who believed because somebody told them at some point in time, you're just not good at this. You're not the type for this. You're not this. You're not that. And to get that person, to see that person open up and become this savage who just walks on the mat like they own it, you know, and just get after it. To see that and then to know when, if they see that here, they're going to see it everywhere else in their life. They're going to see it in their relationships. They're going to see it in their work, in everything. They're going to, this is going to bleed over into everything. We just created a savage.
Yeah.
You know, like if I could get that across to everybody, you know, like remember when you were a little kid and you wanted to be an astronaut? And then also, I'm going to be an astronaut and a doctor and a construction worker and, and, you know, and you never doubted that you couldn't. Like, what happened to that guy? What happened to that girl? You know, like figure out where that thing is inside of you and activate it.
Yeah.
And then start doing it. Start doing the thing. Whatever it is that makes you happy, freaking start doing it. You know, if there's one thing that I came out of my aneurysm with was that. Was like, you know what? My next headache could be my last. I should probably stop acting like I got an infinite amount of time. And conversations that I should have had or apologies that should have been made or any of those things, like quit acting like you got time and start knocking that stuff out. Mm-hmm. Start doing it, you know? So, yeah, that's what I would say to people.
That's fantastic.
You know, stop being small, man. I know there's something in there. Start doing it.
I love it. I love it. Folks, listen up. I know we mentioned it at the beginning of the episode, but if you want to come and train with Paul, come to the Guardian Conference in September. GuardianConference.com awesome. To get signed up. Looking forward to that very much. It'll be a wonderful 3 days with you and a bunch of other great instructors and wonderful, wonderful people that care. And I mean, there's a reason we're all there. Secondly, just a reminder, go check out Paul's websites, his personal website, paulsharpcoaching.com. Again, under construction, but I noticed you have a little, you know, like sign up for updates, you know, yes. Like drop your email in there. So folks do that. Go to paulsharpcoaching.com and sign up for updates from Paul here. And then also sbgidaho.com for the Straight Blast Gym there in Boise, Idaho. If you want to actually train with Paul and the other amazing, sure. Like you guys have an amazing cadre of folks there. I was actually reading through some of the bios. Like impressive.
We've got a solid crew, man. So yeah, we have a solid crew. I said to one of my guys the other day, I said, Matt, his name's Matt May. I said, Matt, how many amateur Muay Thai fights did you have before you went pro? He's like 80 something, but I can't remember.
Oh.
I'm like, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm surrounded by savages. It's awesome. Makes me stay on point, man. I got to stay on game. I got to stay on my game.
Right, right. But that's where you could tell, like, you guys seriously must have a really great thing going because, I mean, you talk about that. You're surrounded by savages. You have an amazing crew of people with amazing backgrounds, lineages, all of that. And yet I can tell just by even just the way things are communicated through your social media, through the website, you got obviously a great kids program, very kids focused and a lot of ladies, you know, women there also training and teaching.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, it's really cool to see. So
yeah. Yeah. Our boxing program is run by a female coach, female boxing coach runs our boxing and she's competing next week. She's fighting for a title.
No kidding.
In MMA.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, good luck to her.
I'm surrounded.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm surrounded. I'm constantly got to stay on my game or they're going to push me off. Yeah. Send me to the old folks home.
Right. Well, where can folks find you on, we mentioned some links, but how about social media?
Yeah. I'm on Instagram, Paul Sharp, SBG on Instagram, on Facebook, Paul Sharp.
Yeah.
So pretty easy to find. It's a picture of me. YouTube, it's Paul Sharp Coaching. And I'm on TikTok, Paul Sharp SVG, but who knows how much longer that's going to be around.
Sure. So, right. That's fair.
Know. Yeah. 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 You know? And that's kind of weird. I don't do a whole lot there.
Yeah. I'll tell you, I enjoy following your social media, man. I mean, like, I was just like scrolling through some of your posts and stuff, which, you know, I don't catch all of them, but, you know, I definitely have interacted with a few, and it just like, I mean, obviously there's some training stuff, there's some fitness stuff, and there's like, I came across this one where you just said, make the dinner table a thing again, and just talked about, you know, the special, like just how important it is just to sit down and share meals across the dinner table with the people you care about.
Yeah.
And just
absolutely, man.
Content, my man.
Yeah. Thank you, man. I appreciate it. So, and I value it. I love it. I love when people interact with me on there, you know, cause it's, that's what it's for, you know, like I want to see, you know, pictures of you doing your thing, man. Like when I scroll through, I'm not just scrolling. I'm scrolling, but I'm checking in. I'm like, you know, oh yeah. Like Sophia's doing this. Like she just interviewed this guy, you know, Riley's over here. Like when you got the H&K thing, I was like, that's badass. That's so awesome. You know, like H&K's in the game. Not that they were not, you know, but it's just like sponsoring a competitive shooter. Come on, H&K, let's go. You know, like, and so I was stoked, you know, when I go through there and interact with people, I'm just excited for my friends. I see like, sometimes, you know, you see sad stories, you know, death and loss and stuff, but that's also part of it, man. You know, being able to interact with people and say, hey, man, you know, whether it's sorry for your loss or I'm stoked for your gain, you know, it's like, that's what it should be about. And so that's what I use it for. I don't do politics. I don't do divisive. I don't do any of that stuff, but I do what I can to try to build community and culture there too. It's a tool for that, I think, or should be.
Yeah.
So
I'm glad you mentioned that, man. I remember at one point, and I didn't necessarily think it was like way out there at the time, but I made a post once and a dear friend called me out on it a little bit and was like, hey bro, you're better than that. Like you don't need to be divisive. And I was like, man, I didn't think about it at that time. Like I didn't see it that way, you know? And then looking back, I was like, okay, that's a fair point. And ever since then, I have really tried, like I appreciate your perspective. I share that now and I'm doing my best. I'm not always the most active, but you know, like that's there's so much divisiveness and negativity in the world. And I just want to make it a better place. Yeah. And I know that you're in
it. Yeah, absolutely, man. Yeah. And there's so many guys out there that are, they're doing their best, man. Yeah. Like they're doing their best. And I look at it, William April one time said he treated social media as like the dinner table. Like who would I invite to sit down and have a meal with me? And that's who I want to interact with on my social media. And I think about that too, like the guys that are far out on either end of things and divisive, I don't really interact with them, just like I wouldn't in real life.
Yeah.
Like if I had some guy ranting and raving over here, I'm like, I'm going to head that way because something bad is going to happen over there. I've seen this before, you know? So, you know, I'm like, man, let's just stay here where we're focused on self-improvement, being better people, being better moms and dads and brothers and sisters and citizens, you know, like what makes me a better person for all the people around me? Also, how can I set a better example for everybody? I want to inspire people, but I also want to be aspirational. Like I want people, and I know this sounds conceited or arrogant, but I want people to look at me and go, how can I do what he's doing except better? How can I be like him, but better? You know, because I always tell people, if you see me doing it, I guarantee you can do it because there's nothing special about me, man, except I do know how to like hyper-focus and work hard. That's it. You know, like no massive amount of intelligence, no great genetics. You know, I just don't know how to quit, you know, so, you know, and I want other people to get that message, man. And like, let's just stay focused on becoming better, you know, and. I think it's everywhere. I think it's human nature sometimes to argue, you know, like we were talking earlier, instead of like, this is my position and I will not change. Shouldn't it be more of, this is what we're finding. What are you guys finding? you know, and I don't want to have conversations with the people that aren't testing, the people that are like, I don't need to try that because I already know. Well, I don't. Okay, cool. Then I don't need to talk to you. But I'm going to come over here and talk to Riley because he's running and gunning. And this is what happened when I shot that course of fire under these conditions. What was your experience with your group? Then we can compare notes. We can rise together, you know, or we can decide like, well, that's garbage. Let's throw it out. But we did it after a testing process that involved a whole lot of people pressure testing. You know, it wasn't just arbitrary and you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's like, man, let's build. And the dudes that don't want to build, okay, go do your thing, bro. You know?
Yeah.
Just don't do it here. I don't want to hear that.
Good stuff, man. You know? Good stuff.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Again, guys, check out and follow Paul and support him and all his endeavors. He's a quality guy. I know that. So, and then I do want to make sure I mention before we part, you know, one of our sponsors of today's episode was Palm Pepper Spray. So I got to make sure we recognize them and thank you to them for making this possible. Yeah. And so Paul, again, thank you so much. This has been an absolutely
lovely
time with you this afternoon, having this conversation with you. Perhaps we could do it again.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man. Yeah, I appreciate it, man. Thank you for asking me.
Cool. Well, folks, that's a wrap. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you got some value out of it. I know I did. And so until next time, a reminder to train right, train often, and train safe so you can fight hard, fight fast, and fight true. Take care. Thanks. A reminder that laws vary from place to place, and we encourage listeners to seek local legal advice to understand applicable laws. Concealed Carry Inc., its brands and properties, and the Concealed Carry Podcast is not a legal service, nor are we attorneys at law. We make our best faith effort to share concealed carry-related insights and information about firearm-related incidents and the laws pertaining based on our own understanding and experience. But things could be different where you live, or laws may have changed by the time you listen to this. We cannot be held liable for your actions based on the information shared in this podcast. Please exercise care with all things pertaining to firearm use, concealed carry, and always practice following basic firearm safety rules. More information about safety can be found at concealedcarry.com/safety.